go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 112 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. The B-Man, I am being a narcissist, looking in the camera at myself while I'm supposed to be paying attention to this episode, but I can't get past the fact that the shirt that I am currently wearing, if you're watching this on YouTube, and thank you very much for watching Verbal Graffiti. I really do adore all of your attention. But yes, this shirt used to be pink. It is currently a shade of orange. And that is because the B-Man, I don't know how to do laundry very well. At the ripe age of 40, I realized, or it was brought to my attention, that you are not supposed to do the wash in hot water. That makes your clothing shrink. It also costs more to use hot water. Therefore, you're supposed to use cold water. Like all the what do you call those people? The health bros who tell you you got to do the cold plunges every morning. That's how you get your vitals going. That's how you live to be 112. Well, to be man, I don't want to live. I want to be 112. I want to die in my early 60s like every other guy in my family. And I plan on doing that by starting to smoke soon. All right. Enough of that laundry checklist. Let's get into the episode 112. And became very enlightening to me. The other day, Monday night, B-Man, I was out there, New Haven, doing an open mic because I am a failure at stand-up comedy. And nobody showed up to the mic. There were four comics. And so the host, a lovely guy, Ishii, just decided to put the kibosh on it and said, hey, we'll reconvene in a couple of weeks. And we all agreed because we didn't want to waste our time. But anyway, some of us stayed at the bar. And there were two comics who I won't disclose, but they were talking shop. They were talking business. They were like, okay, how can we get more people, non-comics, to come to this open mic? Is there a showcase somewhere in New Haven we can do? What type of advertising should we do on Facebook and all the other platforms? And it occurred to me in that moment, because all I was doing was talking to the other comic who doesn't really do much comedy. He's more of a comedy fan, but he does enjoy hanging around those weirdos who do stand-up comedy. I was peppering him with questions about his life because I found it very interesting, and we will get to that. But I was also eavesdropping on this business conversation, comedy business, that is, and it was... What was enlightening to me was I was not partaking in that conversation at all. And that's why I'm a failure at stand-up comedy, because I failed to pay attention and failed to be interested in the business aspect of stand-up comedy. As the famous Jerry Seinfeld said in one of my favorite documentaries, Comedian, he said, you got to remember, this is show business. Which one of those two words is the longest? Business. So, I don't really give a fuck about the business. I just assume, just be funny. Be funny, and the people will come. And the B-Man, I think we're starting to catch on social media. I say this because on Instagram, I'm starting to get a lot of likes on the Verbal Graffiti Reels from bots. It's a lot of these fake accounts, and I know it's fake because it's always a babe who kind of looks AI anime, and she has huge tits that are clearly not real, and she'll have like five photos all in bikini, dressed scantily like the floozy bot that she's pretending to be, and you know, she'll have five photos, five followers, and she just started Instagram last month. And there was a time in my life where I would fall for that and give her my credit card number, and then I would wank off, and then she would threaten to send that video to my family and friends. But again, I am the ripe age of 40. I have learned how to do laundry, and I know now how to spot a bot on social media. But again, back to this open mic that was not an open mic because nobody showed up. The B-Man. So I'm talking to this guy, and I'll say his name. His name is Huey. I won't say his last name, but let's just call him Huey. I was very interested in his life because I do know that he drinks quite a bit. And I can just tell he's probably in his mid-30s, maybe his early 30s. But I have a spidery sense for the Johns that drink a little too much, a little too often. You can usually tell by their fingers. They're usually bloated and swollen, and same with their face, the puffy face. They're alcoholics. They don't have the red nose yet. They're on their way to getting the St. Nick red nose that has all the black marks on it. That is when there's no going back. You're at the dive bar. You are on the regular side of the dive bar. You have your own stool. This guy, Huey, is on his way there. So I'm asking him about, and I know he's an alcoholic because at one point Monday night, he bought a Coke, Diet Coke, and out of his jacket, he pulled a Dr. Diet Pepper, Diet Dr. Pepper, and this is a white guy. And we know that usually it's only black people and my sister Missy who drink Dr. Pepper. I don't know anybody who drinks Diet Dr. Pepper. But anyway, he poured that into his Coke that he bought at the bar, and we all, the three other of us there, looked at him a little cocky-eyed, and he's like, oh, don't worry, this is spiked. Like, this isn't just straight Diet Dr. Pepper. And at other part of the night, he also took a nip out and poured it in there as well. Anyway, so he's an alcoholic, but that's beside the point, and I love alcoholics. Alcoholics are so much more fun than people who get sober and go to AA and spend the rest of their life talking about going to AA and used to be an alcoholic, aka Mark Maron. No, not throwing shade, just maybe I am. All right, so I'm asking about his life. He has an older brother who's semi-schizophrenic, very annoying, as Huey said, lives by himself, has an apartment, but does not work. So I'm assuming he's living off the dole, if you're still allowed to say that. But again, he's schizophrenic, so I'm not going to hate on that. Our tax dollars should go to those who have mental disabilities or not mentally able, whatever the correct term to say. Anyway, back to Huey. So I'm like, okay. All right, so what's the deal with your parents? Are they still? That's a question I've been asking a lot of late. I've been curious about people's parents and the dynamics of their parents and if that's had an effect on their life, positive and or negative. So Huey said, my father's a nerd. He's a doctor. His mom is a nurse. So he was a doctor. Mom was a nurse. I'm like, are they still married? Yes. Do they love each other? Absolutely not. Okay. I'm prying. Why don't they like each other? How do you know this? Why are they still married? I'm peppering Huey with questions. He's like, why are you asking me all these questions? I'm like, well, I'm a nosy motherfucker and I want to know. And I have a podcast. I got stuff I got to find material to talk about. And no, I did not ask Huey if I was going to mention all this episode, but I'll ask him. And he's an alcoholic, so he'll understand. And so Huey, and I say that with love, Huey, if you're watching and or listening, this is where it gets interesting, because I'm a learner. I'm trying to learn. Sorry, I'm a listener, but I listen to learn. So I'm a greedy listener, if that makes sense, and I hope it does. This is what I learned. So his parents have a combative relationship, and I don't say that judgmentally. It's just a fact from what I learned from Huey. What I learned is that when you go to marriage therapy and the B-Man, or a couples therapy, whichever one, and the B-Man, I've been to individual therapy, but not couple or marriage therapy, because I'm a failure at relationships. I hardly ever get it in them. So, yeah, but we all know this. So anyways, he told me that when they went to therapy, and this was when Huey was an adult, so we're talking 20 plus years of marriage before they went to therapy, that the husband, Huey's father, disclosed that he kind of had an affair on his wife. And then Huey laughed at me when he was reporting this to me. And he's like, can you believe my father like admitted to that during therapy? I was like, and my response was a little dumbfounded. I go, well, Yeah, shouldn't he have disclosed that he had an affair? That's what therapy is for. It's for honesty and getting past that, those hangups that you have in your relationship, and, you know, make that bond stronger. And Huey laughed at me. The alcoholic who's pouring nips into his drink at the bar is laughing at the B-man. He's like, no, you don't tell the truth during marriage therapy. There are some things you always keep to yourself. So now I've made a note of that. So when you go to marriage therapy, if you've done something horrendous, like cheating, having sex with somebody else that's not your spouse, you're not supposed to disclose that information, especially if it was more than a decade ago. If you cheat and it's been a decade, don't bring it up at any point in your life, even if it's brought to you in a therapy and someone asks, don't deny, just don't deflect and don't even mention it. And but anyways, Huey told me that his father cheated on his wife, who is a nurse, with another nurse when Huey was very young. So I guess when Huey's mom had Huey, the first few years of Huey's life, his mom was not very interested in sex. There was no intercourse happening between Huey's parents. And I guess there was a nurse at the hospital who brought Huey's dad, who is a doctor, into a closet. And now Huey's dad claims that all that happened was a hand jibber from the nurse on Huey's father's dick. Whether more happened or not, I don't know. I don't think we'll ever know. And then there's also a point, to that point, the hand jibber in the closet, in the hospital, while Huey's dad and the nurse were working. Huey does not blame his father. He said, well, listen, a man's got needs. My mom wasn't touching my dad for the first 3 years after I was born. And my father is a nerd. He's a doctor. He has no personality, just a smart guy. But, he's got no riz. So if a hot nurse comes on you, he gave in to temptation. So it happens. There was nothing mean-spirited about it. It was just boys being boys, doctors being doctors, fucking nurses. That's why you become a doctor. But there was another thing. So I'm like, all right, so what else? What's their relationship like before the therapy? Because, well, there was a lot of yelling and screaming. I'm like, all right, what's that about? And then Huey told me that during this counseling that his parents went to try to salvage the relationship, that his father, Huey's father, that is, also disclosed that Huey's father's older brother tried molesting Huey's father when they were all younger. I guess Huey's father has a large family, and an oldest brother tried touching and molesting all the siblings in the family. And how did Huey's mom, how did she respond when she found out that Huey's dad, her husband, was a sibling was trying to molest her husband when her husband was very, very young? Huey's mom gets drunk every night and calls her husband a brother fucker. Like, she'll get drunk, start screaming, throw a tantrum, and just continually call her husband a brother fucker. But in his defense, like, he wasn't trying to fuck his brother. His brother was trying to fuck him. Like, he was the victim of the molestation, or the attempted molestation. So there's no sympathy coming from Huey's mom. Now, Huey's father is not in the right for getting hand jibbers in the closet while working. But again, if your older brother is trying to molest you when you're all young, you'd think, I would like a spouse to have a little empathy, a little sympathy, a shoulder to cry on. I wouldn't want my spouse calling me a brother fucker when a brother tries to molest me. So, again, the more I conduct these interviews when I'm out drinking at bars and trying to meet new people, because that is a goal to be in this year. I have no TV. I'm trying to go out and have conversations with real people, learn about their lives, trying to become a better listener. The more this happens, the more I become thankful for the parents that I have and relatives. So thank you to my mom and my dad and my siblings for being loving parents and not trying to touch me. And to all my nieces and nephews, I have not tried to touch any of them either. So I hope one day they will thank me for being a non-diddler. So that was a very, very long opening. So let's get into something I found on Reddit that is a little bit more uplifting. Maybe not uplifting, but not family Maury Povich drama-esque. All right. Actually, this is not uplifting at all. This is a bit of a downer of an episode. All right. This comes from the subreddit Dumpster Diving. Two separate incidents tonight that felt unsafe. As I drove up to one of my favorite dumpsters, some dude with a backpack appeared to be hiding behind it. I waited for a while, hoping he would leave, but he didn't, so I left. Second incident, 3 miles away. This guy's a go-getter. A group of 6 guys was hanging out next to another favorite dumpster. That's 2 dumpsters. I waited a few minutes in hope that they would leave, but they didn't, so I started to leave. Moments later, a bunch of police SUVs pulled in and lit up the area. I stopped and watched the action. Evidently, the guys had left the area a minute earlier by going through a big hole in cyclone fence behind the store and into the woods. The police did not follow. Both these incidents had me on edge. I drive a decent truck, a decent truck, and don't want to get jacked or robbed. I thought for a moment maybe the police were waiting for a canine or air support, but now I don't think that was the case. A lot of vehicle break-ins and vandalism has occurred at that business. Well, I read this post on Reddit, and immediately I think of my mom. And if there is a way, I would like to link up you, the dumpster diver, with my mother. My mother is the opposite of you. You are a dumpster diver. My mom is a dumpster throw-outer. My mom has not, maybe I should not disclose this because my mom engages in some illegal activity. Not much, but one activity that she's been engaging in for the better part of 2 decades is she has not paid for garbage. Now, in the suburbs in which my mom and me a lot of time live, there is garbage pickup every Wednesday. My mom has refused to pay that. She will not pay for garbage. So what my mom does, she'll go out after dusk, late at night, with those big black garbage bags. She'll go to my sister's, not her condo, but her ex-condo where she used to live, where they have all the dumpsters, and she'll throw out all her garbage there. And she'll go there once a week, once every 2 weeks, and there's nothing that has stopped my mom from throwing out garbage at this particular dumpster, because they do try. Because the community at that condominium complex, they've erected fences, they put up signs saying, hey, only residents only allowed to throw out garbage here. They have a community members guard the dumpster area, they different pickup times. And anytime there's a risk of somebody catching my mom throw out her garbage in this place where she does not live, it does not prevent her from throwing garbage out there. What it does, it makes my mom become more, she's a little bit more careful, right? So if, let's say she goes on a Tuesday night and there's somebody there or a new sign, she'll change up her schedule. She'll wait till a Friday night, or she'll go early on a Saturday morning. She'll go at a different time, and she'll make sure nobody's watching, or she'll take somebody else's car. Because if you throw out garbage in a dumpster that is not yours, and or if you're a dumpster diver, the risk of getting caught does not prevent you from partaking in the illegal activity that you're doing. If anything, it just makes you become more judicious and more careful with your activity. And that's where you are here. Okay, the fact that there was someone with a backpack at one of your favorite dumpsters, and there was teenagers with police hanging out at your other favorite dumpster, none of this is going to stop you from diving in all these dumpsters in the future. If anything, it's going to make you have to, it's just going to have to make you find new dumpsters, possibly, that you're going to have to dive into. You're going to have to find new dumpsters to dive into. Now, what surprises me about your post is that you posted at all. Because the fact that you have you have a list of favorite dumpsters that you love to dive into and find secondhand kitchen utensils and stuff to sell on the secondary market tells me that nothing's going to stop you. And I'm surprised you posted this, because this is going to bring light to your activity, to the lifestyle of dumpster diving. So if there's anything I know about you cockroaches that live on the fringes of real society, is that a little police activity and some other lowlifes and bums trying to take over your territory is not going to prevent you or change your way of life. So the fact that you posted this, that's a bit of a faux pas, because now, you know, we're out. We're looking. Let's hear a verbal graffiti. Every time we drive by a dumpster, we're going to be looking to see if somebody's diving inside of it. If we are your ankles is like hanging out the top of the dumpster. I'm going to be looking. But this is what you're going to have to do. You're going to either, you have to lay low for a couple weeks. What you might actually have to do is find, you need to expand your radius now. So you have your few dumpsters that are your favorite within a certain radius. You need to expand the radius. This is very similar to the Deadliest Catch, what was that, on Discovery or the Animal Channel, whatever channel, the Deadliest Catch in Alaska, where they go out and they get all the crabs, and there's a hot spot where they put the containers and the bomb in the ocean, and they're full, but now all the ships come and converge in this one area, and suddenly there's no crab because everyone came to the hot spot. So that's what your dumpsters are. Everyone's in this hot spot. We got all the goods. You pre-owned sex toys, tables, desks, mirrors, clothing, like everything you could sell market or eBay, all right, is in these dumpsters. But all you scoundrels have converged on these dumpsters in this radius, and the police, they're on you, helicopters, spotlights, everybody's here. So you gotta do what the ship leaders in Deadliest Catch did, right? When everyone's in one area, it's hot, and then it goes cold, you need to look in your notebook. Where did you used to go 10 years ago? Because now you got to go somewhere that's been cold for years, a dumpster that no one's dove into since COVID, and then you got to go there and find somewhere else. And yeah, it's not going to be as hot and luxurious as the dumpsters you're diving in right now. You might have to go to a YMCA or an old folks home or a dialysis center that has used needles in it. But you got to expand your radius, go to hot spots from years prior, and just, hey man, too many people are on your course. You got to go off course and find some new dumpsters. And this is the lifestyle you live, right? You're a dumpster diver. This will not be the last time that others will converge on your hotspots. Or now that I think about it, there's one other thing you can do. If you really believe these dumpsters are yours, even though they don't have your name on them, all right, there's that famous saying, that famous phrase, right? Never bring a knife to a dumpster fight. You know, what I'm getting at here is, if you want to protect your territory, your favorite dumpsters, go get your pistol permit. All right, go get your pistol permit. Go get yourself a big Glock that you have to hold with two hands. And next time you go to your favorite dumpster, let's say it's next week, and let's just say there's a lowlife, a cockroach there with a backpack on, I take your Glock and shoot him in the kneecap. Just shoot him right in the kneecap. And what's that guy going to do? Right, that guy's on the ground. He's crying. His knee is shot. He can't call the police, right? Because you two are both lowlifes. You're both dumpster divers. So the police, they're not going to file a report because dumpster divers aren't real people. You guys don't pay taxes. So the police are not going to waste their time looking for the guy who shot a dumpster diver in the knee. And let's be honest. Right? If you shoot this guy in the knee who's trying to take over your territory, your dumpster, you know how to get rid of that Glock because you've been practicing. You've been practicing how to hide weapons your entire dumpster diving career. I'm sure through all the diving you've done, you found body parts, used weapons, bloody clothing, like body parts wrapped in, a black garbage bag. You know how to dispose of a gun that you used to shot a competitor to your dumpster. So you know how to get rid of the weapon so you won't get caught and have to go to prison. So those are your two ways. Just expand your radius, find new dumpsters, or be a real man, get your pistol permit, and defend your territory. Let's go look at some photos. Episode 112, segment 2. Please remember to share this episode or a segment of it with a neoliberal, a Marxist, a community college administrator. With that out of the way, I hear this a lot. From everybody, what do you do? I'm single. I have no kids. A career that is going nowhere. A non-career. A dead-end job. I have a comedy career that is floundering. So I hear this a lot. What do you do? Well, I like everybody else in my predicament, I become a conspiracy theorist. That's what the whiteies do when you get to that age where you realize you're not going to have success in your life. So you seek out people to blame for your lack of success and for your failure. So when I'm scrolling through X, and that is the social media platform that I use most, that and Reddit for obviously the content I find for verbal graffiti, I do follow a lot of conspiracy theorists. And conspiracy theorists like to post a lot because most conspiracy theorists do not have real life friends. And I'm noticing, and I'm not sure if this is because of President Trump or I'm not really sure what's going on. Or maybe it's the Israel-Gaza, the little fighting that they're having with each other. But I am finding a lot of these conspiracy theorist creators are writing posts on X telling me and all their followers that it's the Jews. The Jews are infesting our society with pornography as a way to destroy our culture from within. And if that is the case, to all the Jews out there who own pornography and are putting it out on the internet, the B-Man, and all of us here at Verbal Graffiti, say thankful. Say thank you. My apologies. Thank you. Thank you so much for giving us this pornography. I don't give a fuck if it's destroying society. I enjoy it. I get pleasure from it, much more pleasure than I probably should. But I love it. I love it because I will never forget the days where with dial-up internet and you download Smut on your family's computer, it'd wreck your family's computer, and they all knew why, but they never call you out for it. And those were the days, and thankful those days are no longer. And if it is because of you Jews with nefarious minds, I love the Jews. I've always loved Jewish women because they have big bonkers, especially those like those Long Island Jewy ladies. Love them. Love them. There is this, I'm not kidding. I just, big-breasted Jewish ladies, we love you. And to the smut that the Jews are providing on the internet to try to destroy society, I love you too. All right, that first segment went long, so let's keep it going. This comes from Incel Tears, the subreddit for Incel Tears. Incel is angry that a man was nice to a woman. So a Reddit post about a post on another forum. This is getting very meta here at Verbal Graffiti and on Reddit. Giving up a chair for a pretty girl, aka babe. I just need to vent a bit. I found myself in a crowded waiting area the other day where there simply weren't enough chairs for everyone who was arriving. I noticed a short, sub-5 looks guy offering up his chair to an attractive young woman who had just walked in. I couldn't help but think, oh brother, if you tried to approach her for a date, she wouldn't waste her time spitting on the likes of you. Yet, here he was playing the oofy-doofy chivalrous hero for someone who would not give him a second thought. It just really got me thinking about how some people can be so damn oblivious to how they're perceived by these women. Anyway, that's just my two cents on the scene that really caught my attention earlier. Can't believe some guys are blind. Now the Redditor's response, can you imagine him seething in the corner? Yes, the B-Man can, because I have been that guy in the corner seething. Now, this incel and myself, we may be the only two Johns in society who we rank other guys in our area that we see publicly on the 0 to 10 look scale, because you got to scout your competition. You got to play. The reason why Tom Brady was the greatest quarterback of all time is because he scouted the defense. Like, he wasn't watching where he knew where his offensive players were going. He was studying the defense. Now, that same thing I do. I don't look at babes and I don't rank them from, well, I do. The B-Man does rank babes 1 to 10. But before I rank the babes, I'm always ranking the guys, the Johns, where I'm at. There have been so many times where I'll be on a subway car in New York City, most of the time the 7. That was the one I was on the most. And you'd be there, and I'd look around. I'd always find out who are the hot babes. But then right after that, I'd look at all the guys, and I'd rank myself compared to the other Johns in the car looks-wise. And almost always, more than half the time, I was in the top 50%. That's why when people ask me, what number are you? I say, I'm a solid 5. Now, most people will say 6 or, you know what? I don't want to get into a whole ranking system. That's not what this one's about. But just know, when the B-Man is out, I'm ranking all the Johns that are within eyesight. And I do have a very good periphery vision. I did put my eyesight for too long of a time on my resume, 2020. I do not have eyeglasses, although I just bought some frames. You'll be seeing those very soon. Where were we? Oh, yeah. I would judge. I'm not an incel, but sometimes I do enjoy having incel energy as a goof for shits and giggles. But have I judged incels for giving up their seat for a hot babe? Yes, I have. But I want to take a moment, pat myself on the back. What I will never do is run to the internet with my fingers and type a response about seeing an incel give up his seat. I'll keep that information, that thought to myself. That Fraggle Rock, that fool, he gave up his seat. What a loser. What a sucker. But I keep that internal. I keep that internal. Maybe I'll talk about it on stage, but I'm never actually going to go to the internet and put a finger to typing. That's not going to happen. So I'm not as bad as this incel is, but I am bad. You know, I'm on the spectrum. Now, he's not wrong. He is not wrong. That hot babe, that hot girl, as he calls her, she's in the waiting rooms, legs crossed. That lady will never think of that guy who gave up his seat for her in a sexual manner. That is true. But like a normal incel, everything about this incel comes back to sex. Now, let's leave that aside. I don't really give a fuck whether this incel, the incel who gave up his seat, or the lady who now has a nice seat to herself. I don't care about any of their sexual endeavors or lack thereof, because my mind is not in the gutter with this one. I want to direct my ire at the lady, not for not looking at the Johns as a human being, as a potential lover, a partner, anything like that. I want to ask all of you hot babes who are fans of verbal graffiti, when was the last time you did something for a John who gave up his seat for you? And a thank you does not count. A thank you is the bare minimum. If I give up my seat for you, which I don't do anymore, and you don't even give me a thank you, I'm actually not going to do anything, but because I'm a pussy, but I'm going to be upset with you for the next few minutes. Anyways, when was the last time you've ever done anything more than a thank you to a John who gave up his seat for you? Likely never. Never. It's probably been about at least 5 years since I've given up my seat for a hot babe for the sole purposes, just because she's a hot babe, because I ain't a sucker like this sucker in this post was. But there was a time in my more naive days where I would, hundreds of times probably, where it was either a subway in New York City or the Metro North, where I gave up my seat, like the John I am, for a hot babe. And not once did that babe ever say to me, go, oh, thank you for giving up your seat for me. You know what? I'm going to the bakery at the next stop. Would you like to come with me? And I'll buy you a pastry out of appreciation for giving me this seat. Not once has a babe ever offered to buy the B-man a pastry or a coffee or a shot of tequila for giving up my seat for her in public transit. And that's why I don't give up my seat, because I'm not a sucker. I'm not naive anymore. I'm a spiteful middle-aged man. That's who I am now. But that's what I want all you babes to start doing. Carry a Drake's coffee cake in your handbag, so next time a John, an incel, gives up his seat on the subway for you, give him the Drake's coffee cake. And what you'll see that's going to happen is all us incels and all us Johns who start seeing, whoa, hot babes are giving Drake's coffee cakes for their seat, within a year, you'll never have to stand again. If you're a hot babe, you'll never have to stand in public ever again, because everybody loves a Drake's coffee cake. Just watch Seinfeld and you'll learn real quickly that everybody loves the full-size Drake's coffee cake. So within a year, you'll never have to worry about getting a seat. So with all that out of the way, who does the B-man give up seats for? I give up a seat for, or my seat I have, I will stand up and let you have it. If you're an elderly, decrepit person with scoliosis, your skin resembles lava, I'll give up my seat for you, because I do respect my elders. And who else do I give up for? There's someone just disabled with a walker. If you're disabled and you're clearly having trouble or have difficulty walking, moving, I will give my seat up for you. And those are the only two. I do not give up seats for mothers, children, vets. I don't give a fuck. No, no, no. X for you all. I'm not giving up my seat for anybody. My seat, everybody else, until all you babes start wearing sundresses with the long gloves and all of us Johns start wearing three-piece suits with top hats out in the world again, everybody else, all of us, we have to play musical chairs together. Let's continue reading. A Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. We are. Where are we? I should really find this out before. I think we're all right. Yeah, we are at the top of page 93. Like always, we will read two pages together. Baby, he cried. I'm going to fuck you. Fuck you. Do it, she replied in a husky, passion-drenched voice. Do it. A savage excitement started to completely overtake the adulterous young husband, and he fucked into her with mounting intensity, watching in the mirror as he did, positioned behind her, gripping her shoulders for support. Was like looking at the pornographic movie, and it made him even more raunchy than before. The sight of the two naked bodies writhing obscenely reflected in the glass was the most lewd thing he had ever seen, and he reveled in it. Stella was breathing heavily now as she too watched the crude images in the mirror. She was driving his lusty cock into her, his muscular body gleaming with a light film of sweat, writhing and arching as he fucked her. It drove the wanton blonde to excruciating heights of sexuality, and she eagerly pumped her hips, gripping his thick, wet tool, the hidden muscles of her pussy, pulling, sucking, trying to draw him as far inside her as possible. Harder, she cried. Do it harder. Hurt me. Oh, baby, hurt me. Hurt me. As she said this, Alan was jolted. For the first time, he was fully realized the extent of her wantonness. Until now, he had relished it because of what she called up in him. But without warning, his conscience suddenly flashed a picture of Pamela into his mind, holding her arms out to him. And with this came a feeling that she needed him, that she was somehow in trouble and that he should go home and help her. He had never experienced anything like it, but his sudden intuition took hold of him with remarkable strength, momentarily drawing his mind away from Stella. Pamela, Pamela, what's wrong? He thought. Something's wrong at home. Stella sensed his sudden withdrawal, and she quickly made an attempt to bring his mind and body back to her. Don't stop, she screamed. Not now. Ram your prick in my cunt. Now, baby, now. Her obscene words were all the young salesman needed to turn his attention back to the matter at hand. Immediately, the savage animal fury returned to his body and his head cleared of all thoughts of his wife as he once again began to plunge his hugely swollen cock into her hungry pussy. He fucked her without mercy, his hard, muscular buttocks swinging back and forth, his eyes glued once again on the torrid, pornographic images in the mirror. His thick, sinewy, penis was throbbing near the bursting point, and his round, hairy balls slapped weltly against the hot, moist inner thighs of the luscious, pale-skinned blonde, every muscle strained with desire. Go suck a fat one.